Welcome to We The Podcast, the show about how the people outside of the billionaire and millionaire class, you know, most of us, engage the economy. Today, I want to talk to you about transgender community, transgender individuals and people. There's been a lot of stuff in the news about bathrooms, and the issue is not really about bathrooms. It's about the violence people face when they choose to use a bathroom. But a conversation about bathrooms is only one part of what trans people have to face. So many of them have difficulties in getting jobs, housing. They really have a tough time in this economy, and it's important to make sure that everyone is treated fairly in this economy. The transgender community is more visible than ever. Leaders like Laverne Cox, Caitlyn Jenner, and Janet Mock have become icons for the future of the LGBTQ movement. And in my hometown of Minneapolis, my dear friend Andrea Jenkins just received the Democratic Party endorsement for city council. She's a trailblazer and has been for years. She'll be the first out trans person to hold office in Minnesota, and she's doing incredible work. But this increased visibility hasn't improved the lives of all transgender people. In fact, many are suffering. Compared to other states, Minnesota's transgender community is a lot safer and healthier. But that's not saying much. Nationwide, violence against trans people, and trans women in particular, is at an all-time high. An example is CeCe McDonald, a trans woman who was racially harassed and physically attacked outside of a bar in Minnesota. And then when she fought back, she was imprisoned in a men's facility for 19 months for essentially defending herself. This sort of violence has far-reaching implications. Unemployment, difficulty accessing life-saving health care, housing instability, and educational barriers. We need to stop thinking of these injustices as separate from our economic lives. They are part and parcel of each other. To get a better understanding about how trans folks are living in the 21st century, I attended Minnesota's LGBTQ Lobby Day in April and hosted a town hall forum. I'll tell you, it's not easy. It takes a lot of courage to hold space for the truth. I admire each and every one of the folks who came down and shared their story. It took a lot of guts. In fact, I was surprised by a young man who I met years ago and was struggling with his mother about his sexual identity. He had been born female, but he was male, and he needed somebody to stand up for that fact of his life. When I said, "Introduce me to your son," to his mother, I never knew what a tremendous impact that simple statement might mean. But at our lobby day, he said that on that day, he felt that I saw him for who he really was. And I gotta admit, I was touched. But I admire each and every one who shared their stories, and I'm excited to share these stories with you. What struck me was that nearly every story I heard mentioned that trans people have to think about their personal safety when many of us just don't have to worry about it that much. In schools, at home, at work, even visiting a doctor, even when serving our nation. Trans people face unique challenges. There's difficulty finding work. And even when trans people do find work, they can be subject to cruel behavior from customers and even their own colleagues. Daisha, Kaylee, and Zaylor talked about how hard it is getting a job. And Emily jumped in to talk about the legal aspect as well.
I'm a person. I am 41 years old. I have really a lot of troubles getting jobs because I'm trans. At first, I got some part-time jobs. I wasn't paid for 3 weeks because they had a problem with my preferred name versus legal name. I've since changed my legal name, all my documents, but I'm starting my own business to escape transphobia. I'm a house cleaner, and I'm good at it.
There's nothing that I could do legally about the hiring discrimination that I faced, because the evidence of seeing the hiring professional come out with all of his little books and looking over the papers that he's going to ask me questions about, jaunting a step, looking up and seeing who I am, and then losing all that energy and giving me half of an interview because he didn't want to. There's nothing I can prove there, but it's everything that I feel to know that I was not allowed to get a job in that establishment. I went back to school at this time, tried to get a job on top of school, and ended up working at McDonald's because they're very easy to get a job with. I worked there for about 7 months before I realized that, not before I realized, but until it culminated on me that all the bullying I was getting from coworkers, from customers, was too taxing on my mental health. The entire last week that I worked at McDonald's, I remember just crying in the washroom because there was nothing else to do. This is not a way that anyone deserves to make money, to make, what, $7.25 an hour to try to feed themselves. I decided to try to just live off of student loans again, and I quit that job.
I still see discrimination cases and handle discrimination cases from individuals within the LGBT community, whether it's employers not providing reasonable accommodations to individuals who are HIV positive, or terminating employees once they find out that they're HIV positive, or outing transgendered employees at their facilities, and then when they report it to HR, then they end up getting retaliated against in regard to that. So this is still an issue. Even though we have laws on the books protecting individuals, we still need the support from our local officials in regards to making sure that these types of things get addressed and taken care of.
Good morning, my name is Emily Ott. And my specific concern is the First Amendment Defense Act and the similar bills that are popping up throughout the United States, one of which is here in Minnesota. I fear these bills set a dangerous precedent. You spoke about the economic impact of being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer. These bills would allow blatant and open discrimination against members of our community based solely on an individual saying, you know, I have a religious objection to who you are, or to how you live your life, or to who you love. And I cannot think of anything more potentially damaging to the concept of America and liberty and freedom and justice for all people than these bills. It sets a dangerous precedent for future minority groups that might also run afoul of somebody simply because of, you know, what about Wiccan people? Do I get suddenly throw Wiccan people out of my business because I don't agree with their philosophy or with their religious beliefs and they're objectionable to me? Do I, you know, refuse service as a medical provider to somebody because, you know, I'm sorry, but I can't treat your child, your lesbian couple, I don't agree with your lifestyle? These things are happening already. And I fear what this does and what this can do to the United States of America and to its people if these bills are allowed to become law. Thank you.
Most Americans get their health insurance through their employers, but there are no protections to ensure that trans people can have the medically necessary care covered. Here's Deja, Dave, and Kaylee again.
But my wife is on disability now. It's been about a month and a half, and we're facing insurance things in the state that will prevent me from my HRT, which I've been on for 7 months. And that's good insurance. That's Minnesota State Insurance. She works for, what is it called? It's MinSCU. It's Minnesota's colleges, universities. It's awesome insurance. Apparently it's not going to be soon if this fails. So as a natural Minnesotan of 41 years, I'm appalled. I've seen much of the lower half of the southern state of Minnesota. I know for a fact, there's a lot of adversity out there, but the law is about freedom for everybody. There's 24,000 of us in this state. Please protect us.
I am an employee of the University of Minnesota. I work in the Educational Psychology Department. I have great health insurance. Last year, my daughter was lucky enough, after being on the waiting list for over a year at the Center for Sexual Health, to finally get in. The second they ran my insurance, they wanted to let me know that there was a categorical exclusion for any kind of medical intervention. And while that's many years down the road, that's something we need to fix. If the University of Minnesota can't provide coverage for the services they offer as an institution to their employees, something's wrong. They're leading. The Center for Sexual Health is leading in the Midwest as the expert location for affirming trans care. All the services that they either provide or refer to should be covered automatically by our insurance. Thank you.
When I was at Winona State, I put a lot of time into trans activism. I fought very hard to get gender-neutral bathrooms on campus, and I also fought very hard to get HRT programs in Winona, because before I petitioned SEMCAC, which is essentially our Planned Parenthood, about getting hormone procedures in their office, we would either have to go up to Rochester, an hour away, or down to La Crosse, out of state and 40 minutes away. So I tried to get those local, and I succeeded. I did a lot of fighting, about 2 years, and so far what I have to show for it are two bathrooms that anybody can use, free of discrimination, depending on their gender and performance, and now I get to pay about $80 a month for hormones, which is not doable for me. For right now, I take half the recommended dosage. I skip days, I skip weeks at a time because I don't have the money to take care of myself because of all the things that I've had to sacrifice financially have just culminated on top of one another and stacked. And now it's difficult. Even getting here today was challenging. I've counted every penny that every bus has required of me. $50 for a round-trip train ticket to here, $2.25 for the bus here, but I had to pay $3 because I didn't have any quarters. Bottle of water cost $1.25. I'm counting all this in my head, keeping it in track to make sure that I don't go negative before my next paycheck. HRT, I already described, is a very big challenge that I can't do. Student loans. Funny thing about signing up for student loans with your parents as co-signers is that once they have to pay them back, they assume that you're still on your parents' budget. So when they're making $80,000 a year, I have to pay my loans as if I'm making $80,000 a year, when in reality, after taxes, I'm making about $18,000 to $19,000 a year. That is very difficult. It turns out to be $600 to $800 a month, depending on whether or not I want to skip one. But getting through the day-to-day is an incredible challenge, but I'm going to do it in the only way that that I and thousands of other queer Minnesotans know how to, the best we can. We're all fighting to survive, and we will not ever go away.
For many young trans people, growing up and going through elementary school, junior high school, and even college can be extremely difficult. I talked to a few folks who talked about that issue. Talked to Aaron, Leo, Zaylor, Jennifer, and Dave. And they talked about trans identity and growing up and trying to get an education.
And I am a co-president of the GSA at St. Paul Academy, which is a private school here in St. Paul. And something we want to point out is because both Leo and I are the co-presidents, because our parents have the resources to send us to a private school, we are able to be educated in a community that supports us, and we are able to be GSA presidents, and we are able to push for things such as gender-neutral bathrooms, which we now have in our school. And what we wanted to say is this privilege of being able to push for equality and to have our identities be recognized should not be limited to private schools. Students at all schools, including public schools, should be able to have their own GSAs and should be able to have their identities recognized by their administrations, teachers, and peers. But also, as genderqueer youth, we do face a lot of hardship when it comes to choosing colleges, when it comes to trying to find summer jobs. We have to think about what names we put on our applications and resumes, and looking at schools where we will hopefully be able to spend 4 years and get a college degree, we have to carefully think about what places in the country and what schools will be friendly to our identities so that we can focus on getting an education without having to worry about our identity threatening our safety and our mental health.
I'm Leo Bakosin. I'm the other co-president of the St. Paul Academy GSA. I'm a senior, so I just did the whole choose a college and do all that kind of stuff. And most of my college decision making was based on where I wouldn't get kicked out of school, where I wouldn't, as a female to male transgender person, figuring out where I could be housed, where I could be safe, basically. And that really was tough, making those decisions, because I'm in a privileged situation where I can choose where I go to college pretty well based on all those kinds of things, but I still have to make sure that I'm going to be safe. And I think one thing that SPA has that a lot of schools don't is that we have the resources to help students do that, and we also have ways to help push for gender-neutral bathrooms, which is something that both Aaron and I did a couple years ago. We managed to get gender-neutral bathrooms in our school, which was a huge win for us because we already had single-stall bathrooms and we just converted them. But this is, again, like Aaron was saying, something that needs to be available to every single school and also just everyone in general, because it's something that not only privileged people should have access to.
Today I'm here representing as well the St. Louis Park GSA group. As well, because they have a petition that they've been collecting. They already have 400 signatures on the petition and another 50 in-person signatures. The focus here is that it's a student-led initiative to try to get the St. Louis Park School Board to pass a gender inclusion policy. Now, the school board has been working on this. They came up with a draft policy that's been in hand since October of last year, but they stalled. They stalled because of the Gigi case in front of the Supreme Court. They also stalled because of the Virginia-Minnesota case. As well, part of the issue was that they're currently in the midst of looking for a new superintendent. But, you know, the students need protections. And there's currently no policy on the books in regards to whether the transgender and gender nonconforming students can use whatever restroom facility it is that they need. There's no protection for them in regards to faculty members or staff outing them either to their to the other students, to staff members, or to the parents. So, I mean, there's great model policies that are out there, but the schools locally need to be able to pass these policies on their own. It's my understanding that the Minnesota Department of Education, as well as the district attorney, has advised the school boards to hold off in regards to passing these policies because of the Virginia-Minnesota case. But the plaintiffs have pulled back in regard to that action. So there's nothing holding the local school boards in regards to passing these types of initiatives.
My name is Jennifer. I live in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. We're part of Anoka Hennepin Schools. My child is transgender. He's a sophomore. We are experiencing, he came out 2 years ago, so it's been a learning experience. And in this experience, I've encountered multiple phone calls from the school district because my child is trans. Because he wants to use a certain bathroom, because he wants to use a certain locker room, and he won't use the one they tell him to. My child is being pulled out of classes. He's being sat down with principals and district employees, such as Title IX coordinators, upper-level employees, the superintendents. As a child, I did not know my principals. I did not know my superintendents personally. I think that my child should have that experience if he chooses. He should be able to attend school as a boy and be one of the guys. And as far as insurance goes, I'm impacted because I am divorced. He successfully joined the boys' swim team. The staff supported him. With 3 swim meets left in the season, the school board contacted the principal, who contacted me to say, your son cannot change in that locker room anymore. Well, 3 hours later, they rescinded that. But then, instead of being allowed to take FIAD like his peers, he was told, we will give you a FIAD credit for having participated on the swim team in lieu of you not being in these locker rooms.
All right. My name is Dave Edwards. I'm a board member at Transforming Families Minnesota. It's a peer group and community organization that supports families with gender diverse youth. And I appreciate you being here today and focusing on future outcomes for trans people, because that's where my daughter will be in not that long. I love the focus on the future. I think that always has to include our youth's experiences in public schools. We can't expect landlords to rent to a trans person when they watch their high school principal tell a trans student where they can and cannot use the restroom and take that right away. We can't expect managers to make hiring decisions equitable if they've watched their teachers minimize or diminish the discrimination their trans classmates faced. I'm glad we brought up the gender inclusion policy. I helped in a work group with Minnesota Department of Education create a model policy. It has been completed and sitting since October. and needs to come out and be available to schools before the 2017-2018 school year.
This is a tough thing. Families don't sometimes understand. They just don't get how their child born one sex just really isn't that sex in terms of how they see themselves and how they want the world to see them. These folks don't always have the support system that they need. And many talked about the deep opposition that they faced at home from their parents, from their siblings. Take a listen to what Danny, Deja, Kaylee, Hayes, and Kai had to say.
I'm Danny. As Hayes said, I'm also female to male, but I run into a lot of things, and so a lot of the times people kind of don't realize it, but home life isn't very good either, along with schools. It's kind of hard for me, I suppose, because I don't get all the support, but I get support from friends and stuff, and the school does support me, which is good, so.
Hi there, my name is Daja Timmerman, and thanks for letting me testify today. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. My growing up was really hard in this state. I came from Montevideo, Fairmont, Morris area, finally the Twin Cities in Bloomington, and Eden Prairie. I didn't get to come out. I tried in 1996. I couldn't find services, and I was with a really, really belittling family. I eventually disowned my dad because of all this hate. He would turn red in the face and kind of look like he was going to be violent. The past couple years, since I last transitioned, 2015, I've been free. 2015 was a beautiful year for trans people. I felt supported. I felt like I had a place to go. So I took that spot, finally, after 20 years.
My name's Kaylee Jacobowski. Took me 3 years to come out to myself because it was terrifying. But once I finally did, I soon after came out to my parents. They told me, their exact words were, not in this house. So I was not allowed to come home. I got abandoned from all the financial stability that they offered, and was kind of set out to figure it out for myself from there on out.
One of my groups I go to, it's an LGBT group at Face-to-Face Clinic on Arcade, is losing some of its funding, which it is a free group, but they do supply snacks and just activities. Like one time, there's a trans girl there who doesn't have any clothes because her family doesn't support her. And we went out and we got her some clothes so she could feel more comfortable. And a great resource like that is currently losing funding. And also, along with that, there's also a homeless shelter for LGBT youth, which will take up 20 to 40% of the homeless population, is also losing some funding.
I was a sophomore in high school. I was unaware of all things transgender and had no words to describe who I was. Constantly fighting with my mom to prove I liked who I liked and that I would rather wear basketball shorts instead of a dress, I was invisible. Never validated or affirmed, my mom let it be known that she was the one who defined me. I was her daughter. I was a girl. Until one day I went with her to meet a friend. We walked up to his office and he asked my mom, "Is this your son? He's a lot taller than I remember." In my mind, I was like, "Yes." And before my mom could say anything, I quickly replied, "Yep, that's me. I'm her son." In that moment, I was seen. I was seen by somebody, and that somebody was Congressman Keith Ellison.
Every American should be able to serve their military if they're physically able to do so. It's a choice all of us should have available. And this extends to the trans community as well. Take a listen to what Nicole had to say.
I am a queer trans woman. I'm a former board member of the Stonewall DFL. The LGBT caucus of the DFL party, and I'm a current board member of Transforming Families. As a direct result of my trans status, I've experienced family rejection, homelessness, hunger, sexual assault, discrimination in education, employment, and in healthcare. And I could talk about all of that for a long time, but we don't have any time. So I'm going to talk about my experience as a veteran of the U.S. forces. Like many other trans folks who serve in the military at a proportion of twice that of the general population, I served honorably in the U.S. Air Force. I get my treatment solely from the Department of Veteran Affairs, which currently operates under a blanket exclusion for transgender surgical care. It's unconscionable that in 2017, we have a federal agency who is not only failing to prohibit discrimination, but operating under policies that prescribe discrimination. So I really want to ask you to take action to circumvent those policies, to end those policies, to prevent our federal agencies from discriminating against trans folks. Thank you.
But trans people aren't just facing discrimination for being trans. Like everybody, trans people have multiple intersecting identities, like being black and female, or having a disability and being gay. There's a lot of different things that all of us are. But even within the LGBTQ movement, there is still inequality. Here's Lucy and Roxanne talking about intersectionality.
I'm transgender, male to female. I'm autistic, Jewish, and just recently got hired as a paraeducator with a great company. Doing great things with me as far as restroom accommodations when I work at high schools and things like that. But the real reason I want to share and testify is that whenever it comes to the LGBT community and conversation, wherever I go, I experience what I consider to be a gap in the conversation, and that gap is around disabilities, and the one I can specifically speak about is autism. And I volunteer a lot with Autism Society Minnesota, awesome.org, AUSM, and it's just, I just think it's very dangerous for those people out there, because there's a lot of nonverbal autistic people and then people of all sorts of disabilities that, depending on where they're living or what their current situation is, they may not have the freedom that able-bodied people do to speak for themselves. And it's just, like I said, we're trying to get a mentorship program going for autistic adults like me to mentor younger autistic people. And I'd like to see more programs like that in the LGBT community, where no matter what your other identities are, that that LGBT adults could come alongside LGBT youth and show them how they've coped and how they've managed to live a healthy and successful life.
I want to talk a little bit about the place where I work and spend a lot of time, which is at 3405 Chicago, the Minnesota Transgender Health Organization and Coalition. We're formed by and for transgender folks. We're the only transgender led by and for 501c3 nonprofit in Minnesota. We do a lot of work, and we've been doing that work since 2007. We offer services that are inclusive and serve about 165 trans and gender non-conforming folks through the week. We do this through 6 support groups. Our SHOT clinic serves over 40 people in the 6 hours a week that we're open. We've spent a lot of time working with Dave and others with the Minnesota Department of Ed to be gender inclusive in schools and to ensure that trans and gender nonconforming folks could mark their identities on the student survey. Something that we need to make sure we keep in place for Minnesota. We do harm reduction through syringe exchange. We offer a food shelf, a clothing shelf, gender gear. We do shot assistance. And we do that all through the support of volunteers. We operate with a budget of under $30,000 a year. That sounds awesome, and it's also not sustainable. That means that everybody that gives their time and their energy and effort to MTHC does so without pay. We're located in 3405 Chicago, which also houses Cafe Southside, which employs at about 80%, 85%, depending on the year, trans and gender nonconforming folks. I don't know that there's any place else in the whole state that can say that they employ the majority of the people that they employ are trans. And it also houses Rare Productions, which is an art and entertainment production company for LGBT folks of color. The reason that I'm mentioning this is because, like lots of folks have said, we're in jeopardy. We don't have very much funding, and we don't get a lot of support from foundations or big business. So I think to the point of economics, it's really, really important to know those organizations that are specifically serving trans folks and to figure out how to support those.
Listening to these very real struggles, I get upset thinking about how much time we have to spend convincing people to treat trans people as equals. In a country dedicated to the simple idea of liberty and justice for all includes trans people. It's clear we have a lot of work to do, not just with our opponents, but even within our own progressive communities as well. I don't always know the right words, and Lord knows I've made mistakes, but that's okay. Even though I'm not trans or LGBT, I do have the experience of being a person. And that's all you really need to know. You should respect everyone the same way you want to be respected as a person. What's important is to listen. I hear that, and I accept what my trans friends and colleagues are telling me. And that I do the work that they ask me to do, and that we work in partnership with our partners in the trans community. That's how you build a movement of generosity and inclusion. Thanks to Outfront Minnesota and Minnesota Transgender Health Coalition for their help coordinating this town hall. But more importantly, thank you and everyone who came to my town hall and shared their experiences. Aaron Dota, Becky Evan, Danny Roman, Zaylor Stout, Deja Timmerman, Dave Edwards, Emily Ott, Hayes McRoy, Jennifer Halpas, Kaylee Jakubowski, Kai Ellams, Leo Bukovson, Mara Glubka, Nicole Vanderheiden, Lucy Peterson, and my friend and buddy, Roxanne Anderson. Podcast. This is Keith Ellison, and I'll see you next time. Do me a favor, head on over to We the Podcast iTunes page and rate, review, and subscribe. This episode of We the Podcast was produced by Nikki Line Gang, Brett Morrow, and the gang. Take care.